This episode is brought to you by DeSanto Propane. DeSanto has been serving the energy needs of upstate New York since 1937. They're a fourth-generation family-owned business that has prioritized dependability, reliability, and integrity. If you have energy needs, call DeSanto and tell them we sent you. Visit DeSantoPropane.com to learn more. And by the Fox family of dealerships on Route 5 in Auburn. Check out their vast inventory of new and used cars by visiting FoxDealerships.com. From FanLakes1.com, this is Inside the FLX. Today we are discussing a recent merger between two local ARC chapters serving Seneca, Cayuga, and Yates counties. The merger has created an entity now known as Mosaic. Alan Connolly, who serves as Mosaic CEO, is with us in studio. Alan, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Josh.
So, a lot to talk about, but I'm curious. The biggest question that we got heading into this was, why merge? So if you could, walk us through what sort of the thinking was when you guys started to bat around the idea of a potential merger between these organizations.
Well, this really started about 18 months ago whenever the ARC of Yates lost their CEO. Mm-hmm. And they were looking for another CEO to come in and work with them and see what they could provide and also what this particular CEO could provide them. And so they went through the interview process and they decided that, along with our board, that we would work together and I would be there as their CEO as well in this time to kind of figure out where we're going, what we're doing. And so over the 18-month period, worked together, we started to assimilate more, we started to recognize that we have a lot of commonality in what we do. And because of that, during this time period, and because of a lot of outside pressures, and we can talk about that in a little while, yeah. We made a decision, the boards made the decision, that it was better together as opposed to separate. And so during this time period, we made that decision. We went through all the different things that you have to do in order to merge. And it'll take about a year process from January of this year to go all the way through that. But really, the main thing was culture was the same. And that we also just did not want to have someone, some entity outside of us determine what our future was going to be. Mm-hmm. And so we felt like if we're together, we're stronger, we're larger, we can provide more services to all the communities that we're in and be able to serve everyone in our community. Our vision really is to create one strong community. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of communities within those that we serve. And so that's our path forward in terms of the vision that we have, and that's what the two boards, now one board, decided to do.
What did those early discussions look like? I'm trying to picture a scenario where two entities, which from the outside are seen as pretty large, pretty significant players, I'm trying to imagine what that initial conversation must have been like.
You know, that's an interesting question because, you know, when I was the CEO for the ARC of Seneca Cayuga, the question from their board was, well, what's in it for us? I mean, there was not necessarily a long-term strategy to say, oh, you know what, we're going to merge after so many months or years or whatever. It was really an investigation. So basically what they were saying was, we're going to give up our CEO half-time to be able to be down in Pinyan with the ARC of Yates and to be able to, you know, hopefully sometime in the future, kind of meld all the best of the best. But there was no guarantee. You know, there wasn't an agreement that, you know, after 18 months, 24 months, we're going to merge. So the board, and I give them a lot of credit, they were strategic in their thinking in terms of, you know, this is a bigger picture. We need to investigate this. We need to support this and see where it goes. Because, you know, in the next couple of years, managed care will come in. Managed care is going to be very difficult for agencies like ours because of our population. And managed care is all about competition, driving out cost in the world of medical and supportive services like we have. And because of that, that means that we are going to be competing with larger organizations around our area, within our region, amongst the state. And so we need to be of size to be able to do that effectively. Now we will be, you know, around a $35 million budgeted company, approximately 700 to 800 employees. And our mission, it really is to continuously improve and grow. Because if we don't do that, then we're going to be like everyone else in trouble. So we really want to establish ourselves as the organization that people can come to and be supported by us and what we do.
And you mentioned managed care. What is that change? And this isn't the first time I've heard it, but we haven't heard a lot in terms of details and what this means from the inside. So walk us through what those changes, I guess, look like from your perspective.
Well, around the state, around the United States, there have been several states that have gone into this managed care model, and it's really coming from the federal government, and particularly in what we do. And it's basically a way to say, you know, we have too much cost into the system, be that Medicaid, Medicare, and in order to manage that appropriately, we need to do some things that will drive out that cost. For the longest time, it's been fee for service. You know, we provide a residential program and we get paid to do that with the individuals that we serve. And now what they're saying is that we're going to be looked at in terms of outcomes. What types of outcomes will we have for the population we serve? And that can be a multiple things, which they haven't really even determined yet. It's slid a little bit in terms of timing.
Yeah.
But really, it's about driving out cost in the system. And since New York State is one of the top two in terms of Medicaid-funded programs, the federal government's saying, you know, we really do need to do a better job at driving out cost. And you'll hear that from the governor. And of course, that's going to challenge our population because our population is different. In the medical model, if you have someone go to the hospital, they go to the hospital, in theory, they get better, and then they go home. Mm-hmm. With our population, for the most part, because we serve people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, for the most part, they don't get better because that is a portion that's a function of their life, you know, and so we can do everything we can to support them, to work with them, but they're not going to go to a hospital and get better and go home. So it will be a lifetime of support. And so the managed care model doesn't necessarily work with our model. And so we do know, however, that we will have to work with larger insurance companies and we'll have to provide service and we'll be at a particular standard and the quality of care. And if in fact you don't do your jobs well, then that means that you won't get to be able to provide as many services and therefore you won't be able to be provided a particular cost for that service. And it's just kind of this filter that goes down and down and down, and that will cause problems for entities that don't have a very good quality of service.
Was the lineup not really considered? Was the fact that this didn't really align with the services that you guys were providing, was that not part of the discussion or debate prior to this being set into motion?
Well, you know, as I understand it, because this predates me coming here to New York State, but, you know, this has been discussed for many years prior to coming here, and I think it was really forced by the federal government. Mm-hmm. Since we are such a small population relative to the whole,
right.
I don't think that was the portion that was considered. Mm-hmm. And so it can be problematic for agencies like ours going forward.
Okay, so you mentioned it a little bit. I want to talk more about that, though. Small population compared to the whole. What kind of strains, what kind of challenges, other than those, does it put on an organization like the two prior organizations that prior to the merger and now the newly formed, even though it's larger, it's right. still operating in a relatively small portion of the broader community.
Right. And really, a lot of it boils down to, and will continue to boil down to, is regulation. You know, if you're a company, an agency that's in this world of supporting human services, we are very highly regulated. And with us, we have the Justice Center as well. And so if you are not of size, you will not necessarily have the capability to keep your quality standards up, to keep your ability to look at all these regulations that are coming down on you and be able to recognize, support those, and be able to work within those regulations. Because if you don't do that, Medicaid can be very problematic on the federal side. And so it's important that you're of size so that you're able to do all that work and all the regulatory work that you have to do within the scope of the program.
When you look ahead to 2020 and beyond, I suppose, what are the changes that people are going to see that maybe they haven't seen yet from Mosaic, but will be seeing implemented in the coming months?
Well, you know, we have varying programs that we, particularly here in Seneca County, Cayuga County, and we haven't been able to talk with regards to the previous ARC of Yates and what they do, and we want to filter more in that because we look at this as taking the best of each organization and bringing them as a part of this, as opposed to one organization taking over another. That was really not the case here. A lot of times when you merge, there's an issue with regards to one entity is in financial straits. That was not the case here. That both were stable organizations, and so we're able to kind of build out from there. The programming that the ARC of Yates had are some things that we've never had here in Seneca County, which was a couple of things. We have the Cayuga Lake School, which is a licensed daycare that we have there, and we work with the Pinyan school system, and we're able to do a lot. We have full day daycare, half day, before and after care. We have a summer school. This is all related to kids that are between the 18 months and 12 years, and we have several of the rooms within this program that are integrated, which we would say. So we have kids that you would think they don't have a particular disability. We have other children within that they have, or that daycare program that would have, they could be on the autism spectrum. Mm-hmm. And so they're in together,
right?
Which is a very positive thing, we think, because it helps children on both sides. And so we've been running that organization for many years, and it's a great program for that particular entity. One of the things that we're excited about as well is we have what we call a drive program. So it's a program for college age kids that have disabilities, and they go to Cayuga College and are able to take classes there at college and get that college experience. Mm-hmm. And they do graduate. They graduate with a certificate. They take part in the graduation ceremonies at Cayuga College. Cayuga College has been very, very supportive of us during these years, and we're just very proud of that program. And that helps young people transition to the world outside, because we find that between the time that kids graduate from high school and going on to, if it's work or if it was college, there's this gap, and it's very problematic for them and their families, and so they are not able to figure out what it is they want to do with the rest of their lives. And as we all did when we were young people trying to figure out what we're doing, same thing applies with people with varying disabilities. And so they need that support, and we give that to them and give them a chance to look toward the future as to kind of how they would like to work in the marketplace. And so that's a big gap that you don't see in a lot of areas, particularly in the rural area, for that support. But we do that, and so we're hopeful that this program has historically been in Yates County,
right?
But we believe that we can provide more from our staff, from our people here in Seneca County, Cayuga County, and other places as well.
Now, when you look at that geography, the layperson looking on the outside of this is going to say, Cayuga, Seneca, and Yates County, that is a spread. That mm-hmm. that must, in some way, shape, or form, pose challenges. When you look at the new organization moving forward, is that something that's been on your guys' radar so far, going through the merger process, to make sure that you're able to get the resources all across the counties?
Another great question, because that is absolutely true, because you think about all three counties all together, we're talking about 1,500 square miles, something like that, 12 mm-hmm. to 1,500 square miles. We have over 30 facilities between the three counties. We also run clinics in all three counties, plus Ontario clinics being we have professionals who psychiatrists, psychologists, social workers, occupational therapists for the population that we serve. And so we are spread out. And so that has been one of the things that we have been looking at in terms of our budget is how do we get people to where we need them, and how do we, how do we cross-functionalize all those folks to be able to support. And so we have been able to do that. We've actually taken some leadership from the Ark of Yates, leadership from Seneca Cayuga, and we've been able to kind of overlay those and spread those out so that we are in various locations throughout the week. So it's almost like, the game Where's Waldo? Your staff is spread out. You're going to have a meeting with this particular person or that particular person, and you might be in Waterloo and they might be in Pinyin. We know one thing is that we are actively working on our IT structure and being able to do a lot more in terms of conference calling, video conferencing, mm-hmm. Setting all those things up. And it's the same thing with our board. You think about it, we have board members coming from all the way from Skinny Atlas down, past, Dundee and everywhere in between. And so it's important that we're able to communicate effectively, and so the IT infrastructure is one of the critical things that we're doing right now in order for us to be connected as much as possible.
Let's talk a little bit about the branding and how you guys went through in choosing Mosaic to be the new. Obviously, there must have been some uncertainty with that, mm-hmm. I would assume.
Mm-hmm.
How was Mosaic chosen first?
Well, one of the things that we knew was that we wanted to be more than just a provider of services to the historic population that we served, which was right. the intellectual and developmental community. And we knew that for us to be a larger player within the region, we were going to have to expand. And so there was a lot of thought and commentary. We put out the various names. We asked about names from all of our staff, and one of the names that kept on coming back, and it was actually I believe it was developed by one of our young staff named Sarah, who had talked about Mosaic and the name Mosaic with a Z to be a little bit different, and just really what does Mosaic mean, and knowing that we had two organizations that had various different structures, different people, different staff, and if we were able to bring all those parts and pieces together, that we could build a strong community, and that just kept on resonating with us. Mm-hmm. We have many people, many staff, many family members, many individuals that we serve, and how do we bring them into one community, knowing that, to your point, we're so spread out.
Yeah.
And so Mosaic kept on resonating with our staff and with our family members and with our board members. Mm-hmm. And again, I have to give them credit because historically, around the state, the Ark is the Ark. The name is the Ark of something.
Yeah.
And so they understood from a strategic point of view, if we wanted to expand the services that we provide, that we needed to look at being something different, not better, but just different than the Ark. And Mosaic was the name that came up, and we think that we can really build off that as the future comes.
I would imagine at some point there had to have been at least a few hard conversations about what moving away from the Ark brand could possibly mean. Obviously, the pros outweighed the cons in that situation.
Absolutely.
But how long did that sort of deliberation process play out for while you guys were moving through?
Well, we started the process back in July of last year, so it worked its way in probably about three or four months. And the other thing that we have really started to be committed to is in terms of our staff, and we understand that we really can't forecast the future. And when you can't forecast the future, what is it that you do? And what you do is that you pivot and you use speed in order to figure out, you know, if you have a regulatory body that says that you have to start doing this and you're a slow moving organization, you're going to be in trouble. So what we have been doing, even with this large organization, is to recognize that we have to move with speed. And so we have been doing that as a leadership team and as a board to turn and to pivot as quickly as we can. And so this name came up relatively quickly, and we kind of glommed onto it, and we got right after it. And we did all the things that you need to do in order to get the name, and we took some leaps of faith because we weren't really sure.
Yeah.
In terms of communicating that to the board and getting them involved in it and, you know, getting the website name. And so it happened relatively quick.
The reception. What has the reception been like to the changes, whether that be the community that supports you, whether the folks you're serving, or even just sort of the communities around where you guys are working out of?
So far, it's been good. You know, I have not heard anything negative, and of course, it's relatively new. You know, we're 3 weeks in to our new branding, and of course, the thing is that this will be a year of transition, so we don't have all of our branding out there. It's going to take some time. Mm-hmm. You know, our all the transportation, the buses that we have, they will be slowly moving over to the Mosaic brand. We have a couple that already have the Mosaic branding. Our website is not up to speed yet, so we're transitioning that. You know, all of our other promotional material is changing. So it's going to be some time. You know, we have to change not only our IT infrastructure, but also our payroll systems and all of those things that go into that for all these staff that you have had for these many years. And so it's going to be a process for sure. But it's been positively received from the staff, from the community at large. We haven't really heard anything negative as of yet. And so I'm just really pleased with how it's gone.
What is the, when you sort of look at your organization and the new organization especially, overall, what do you think the big misconception is, or a couple big misconceptions about what it is you guys do, sort of the day-to-day stuff, or even just broadly part of the mission?
Well, you know, I think, you know, my experience has always been, you know, and I've been in the nonprofit area for, gosh, now 10, 12 years, and prior to coming up to New York, I was in charge of an agency that served the blind. So the blind population, and so many people think that the blind or the disabled can't do things. They can't, you can't communicate them like with the regular friend that you might have that doesn't have a disability or is not blind. You know, I've been to places where where I've seen blind personnel, disabled personnel do a lot of work, manufacturing work for Boeing aircraft. So, you know, here you have a blind, deaf individual making high-end parts for Boeing. And we, the Arca Seneca Cayuga, now Mosaic, we have been making hats, you know, beanies, wool, fleece, hats for the military for over 25 years. So the DOD is one of our biggest vendors, and we are very supportive of that. If you can think about in this small little community, we do a lot of work for our nation's warfighters. And I can tell you, you know, I fly around the country quite a bit, and I see some of our armed forces, you know, sitting in the airport, you know, and I'll go up to them, and I will see that they have one of our hats, and it's made by Finger Lakes Textiles. And to know that our staff are able to do this, we have an integrated work environment, we have people with disabilities and people that would not be considered disabled working side by side. You know, I challenge people to come into our facility and figure out who is disabled, who's not. It doesn't really matter because everyone's doing the work. So that's a misconception in the community. And so we have been changing that. Last year, we were recognized as the Business of the Year by the Seneca Chamber of Commerce. Yep. And so we have to compete just like everyone else. And so so our company is moving from more of a social services agency to a business with a social mission model. And we understand that we have to compete on a day-to-day basis. And the people that we serve, if we do not serve them well, they have a choice. And they can go and get services from someone else. And so we recognize that. And so with that, along with the kind of the misconception of our community in terms of what the people are like, and we're still working through that. The great thing is on national news these days, you're starting to see more and more articles with regards to people with disabilities, mm-hmm. and what they can do, you know, having their own businesses and working in this particular environment or that particular environment. Those are all great things. And I think that movement is fantastic. And I think hopefully it will continue to grow. But that's kind of the we always talk about being kind of the little secret that no one knows about in our community, and we want to change that frame. And part of that rebranding with Mosaic is to change that frame in terms of the mindset of people. I can tell you this: whenever anyone comes into our facilities, and they come into any of our facilities, and you know, Finger Lakes Textiles, they walk away amazed. I have never had anyone, you know, be kind of ho-hum about the whole thing. And typically out of that experience, we have new advocates. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm proud of the fact that our staff are able to do that and to provide those opportunities for people who sometimes don't get those opportunities. And the great thing for us is that we our vision is that one day, we will be totally self-funded by the work that we do. You know, we get a lot of Medicaid funding, and because of that, we have to do certain things from a regulatory point of view because they are the ones giving you the money to serve the population that you serve. But what we would love to be able to do is say, you know what, we are able to fulfill our mission by the work that we do on our own. And if we can do that, there's a lot of power in that, and we can make decisions on our own without having to check with the regulatory body that we're doing okay with this or that. You know, we want to be able to own it ourselves, and you know, it's a part of our mission going forward, and we really want to embrace that activity that we can do this on our own.
And when you look at the rewarding nature of the work and the hard work that all the folks who work for you put into every one of these facilities, when you're talking to young people, particularly high school, college students, that nature. What's the message to them to sort of reinforce that this is incredibly powerful work that is a really worthwhile venture to pursue in your life because of the impact that you can have, especially on small communities like the ones around here in the Finger Lakes?
Well, the thing for me is, you know, I consider myself really blessed because I was able to work in the commercial field for many, many years, mm-hmm. and I knew what that was like, and I knew the requirements of, you know, hitting your quarterly numbers, and if you don't, you're gone, potentially. And working in other countries, I saw that readily apparent. And so when I was able to step back and I was able to say I want to do something different with my life and to be able to work in the nonprofit area, and I actually saw the impact that it has on people, not only the people that we serve, but also the staff that work with us. I would talk with young people about what type of meaning do you want to have in your life. And it might be that, you know, you might want to work in the commercial world for a few years, but then after a while, you might say, you know what, I just really want to make some sort of an impact. And if you're already there coming out of college, we can utilize your services because there is no better feeling than whenever you're serving someone else, you're working with someone else, they're helping you, you're helping them, and you're responding to a whole different personality in person. And if you're a professional, if you are a licensed social worker and you want to support people that are different than the regular population that you might see in a particular social services realm, man, this is something because you're able to make an impact. And I see our clinic staff and how they do things and how long they've been here. And it's just so positive. And again, with young people, if you want to feel good about going to work every day, you might want to choose something like this because there are a lot of opportunities. Not the greatest pay at all. I'm not saying that, but you can see the impact, and I think that's what brings people to this career set. It brought me, and you know I'm very fortunate, and I get to see that impact not only here, but you know as I travel around the United States.
Alan, appreciate the time. Thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us this hour on Inside the FLX. I'm Josh Durso, and we'll be back next week with another episode. In the meantime, download the FingerLakes1.com app to have the latest local breaking news, alerts, and podcasts delivered right to your hand each and every day. Follow and subscribe to the show on YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. If you enjoy the program and can support us, head over to patreon.com/FL1 to pledge monthly support. If you have an idea for a show or simply want to let your voice be heard, drop us an email or leave us a voice message by visiting insidethefLX.com. Thanks again for listening. I'll see you back here next week.